The headlines: multiple Israeli casualties are reported as twin explosions hit the occupied Al-Quds. The UK Supreme Court's ruling is out. Scotland is not allowed to hold a new referendum on independence. And also in our headlines, Ukraine says it's bracing for massive Russian attacks on its energy infrastructure. Our top story for this half hour: two explosions have rocked the occupied city of Al-Quds, killing one person and wounding more than a dozen. The first blast happened at a bus station at the entrance to Al-Quds city, while the second explosion targeted a bus stop a short distance away. Israel is blaming the attacks on Palestinians. Hamas and Islamic Jihad resistance groups have praised the operation, calling it a natural response to Israeli crimes. The explosions happened amid Israel's increasing violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in recent months. Elsewhere, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says that it will continue its cross-border operations against anti-Iran terrorist groups based in Iraq's Kurdistan region until they are disarmed. The commander of the IRGC ground force called on people residing in the vicinity of terrorist bases in northern Iraq to evacuate the area. Brigadier General Mohammad Pakpour said his forces used missiles and drones to target strongholds of anti-Iran separatist terrorists. The IRGC has been carrying out strikes on terrorist hideouts in the Kurdistan region since late September. Iran has repeatedly warned Iraqi Kurdish officials to stop the activities of terrorist groups along its borders. But according to the IRGC, the Kurdistan Regional Government has failed to deal with those groups. The IRGC says terrorists from northern Iraq have recently entered Iran's border cities to carry out armed attacks in the country. Journalist and political commentator from London, Said Mohsen Abbas, joined us earlier with his take on Iran's missile and drone attacks on bases of Kurdish militants in northern Iraq.
Well, it's getting increasingly crucial. It has, of course, been a long-running situation, this problem within the Kurdish region. And Iran, as you rightly say, has been trying to have it resolved to no avail, it seems. And now, as they say, the chickens are coming home to roost, because it's that very corridor of the Iraqi Kurdistan region where a lot of the weapons, a lot of the supplies, and a lot of the current insurgents as well within Iran are taking huge support through basically. And what's the background to this region's connections to the enemies of Iran? Well, that's really important, and I people often don't maybe cite this, but Israel has a huge presence in this northern Iraqi Kurdistani region, and they've had it for decades.
More news from Iran. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says one of its aerospace experts have been killed in Syria. According to a statement by the IRGC, Colonel Dawood Jafari, who was serving as a military advisor, lost his life in a roadside bomb blast near Damascus. The IRGC is blaming Zionist operatives for the attack, saying that the criminal regime will undoubtedly pay for this crime. Iran has maintained advisory missions in Syria at the request of the government in Damascus. Iranian military advisors have been helping the war-torn country in its decade-long battle against foreign-backed militants. In 2017, Iran's advisory assistance helped Syria defeat the Daesh terrorist group. We're going to go back to our top story for this half hour. Two explosions have rocked the occupied city of Al-Quds, killing one person and wounding more than a dozen. For more insight on that story, we're now joined by Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University, Mr. Mohammed Abu Saad, who's joining us from Gaza City. Also, we have international lawyer Barry Grossman, who's joining us from Bali. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Abu Saad in Gaza City. Palestinians are known for throwing stones at Israeli forces, and this has become symbolic throughout the decades. But more recently, we're witnessing growing use of firearms and now even explosions. In your opinion, what has changed?
It's true. The Palestinians, over more than half a decade since the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories, West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem in 1967, have utilized multiple tools to fight back against the Israeli occupation and Israeli settlement expansion in the Palestinian occupied territories. The Palestinians have utilized armed resistance, popular nonviolent resistance, stone throwing. But let me say that there is a shift. We have witnessed a shift in the way the Palestinian resistance fighters have been fighting back against the Israeli occupation. We have seen lately a number of, for example, car ramming, stabbing, and also shootings. But I have to agree with you that the explosion which took place in Jerusalem today is probably the first of its kind in many, many years. I remember the last time the Palestinians were using car bombings or bombs which were detonated by remote control was like 20 years ago when the second Palestinian Intifada erupted. But I think this shift in Palestinian resistance against Israel has to do with the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians, with the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians. More than 200 Palestinians have been murdered and executed by the Israeli occupation forces since the beginning of this year, 2022. And many of those who have been murdered and killed by Israel are Palestinian children, like the one who was killed yesterday. And many days ago, also Palestinians under the age of 16 have been murdered and executed by the Israeli occupation forces. Also, the election of a right-wing political parties in Israel, ultra-Orthodox parties and ultra-Zionist parties who have won the Israeli elections about 3 years ago, and they are in the process of making a new coalition government. That is a bloody message to the Palestinians that the coming Israeli government, which will be led by Netanyahu, is going to be a war government, a government that is dedicated to more aggression and more murderous acts against the Palestinians. And what we see is retaliation by the Palestinians against this Israeli aggression.
Barry Rossman, Israel seizes Palestinians' land, demolishes their homes, kills and jails them regularly. The army even instructs soldiers to open fire on young Palestinians who throw stones. Isn't it inevitable that people living under brutalized occupation will react one way or another?
Well, absolutely. And I think Palestinians are undoubtedly feeling frustrated by the complete lack of progress towards a solution. While at the same time, the occupation continues to become more and more brutal every year as they carry out their long-running ethnic cleansing operation. But it's interesting to reflect on what's happened today. A single individual has been killed as a result of two explosions which even the occupation security forces are saying they do not yet know the cause of. Yet it only took a matter of a couple of hours before almost every media outlet on the planet, especially those with Zionist inclinations, started running stories, conceding in some small measure that nobody's taken responsibility for this incident and that the underlying cause remains unclear, but then immediately launching into language that characterizes Hamas as some kind of a terrorist or extremist organization, that talks about supposedly Palestinians supposedly killing upwards of 20 Israelis this year, and that the increased operations by security forces against Palestinians was simply a response to that, and other quite blatant lies. Meanwhile, any time a Palestinian is killed or kidnapped, something which happens pretty much every day, there's exactly zero traction in the same media that's now beating the war drums on behalf of this new ultra-conservative government that we expect will be taking the reins very shortly under Netanyahu's leadership, notwithstanding that Netanyahu still stands indicted on numerous quite serious corruption charges. His designated internal security minister, the head of the Jewish Power Party, is calling basically on security forces to already start what can only be described as collective punishment by going door to door throughout the West Bank and brutally searching houses and punishing people on the assumption that they're somehow part of this armed resistance. Now, it's worth reflecting by way of background that Palestinians, of course, tried to give peace a chance at the end of the Second Intifada, now almost 20 years ago, by unilaterally abandoning tactics which certainly the occupation deemed to be terrorist tactics. And when we look at the relevant statistics, in the first 10 years following the Second Intifada, as a result of Palestinians unilaterally changing their tactics, the incidence of what the occupation government called acts of Palestinian lethal Palestinian terrorism was reduced by 95% across the board for the entire 10-year period. And in return for giving peace a chance, what Palestinians found out, what they were forced to deal with, were a series of extremely brutal, heavily militarized attacks on Gaza and other operations in the West Bank, which took thousands of Palestinians of lives and which destroyed tens of thousands [S2] Right. [S1] Of homes and all sorts of other infrastructure. That's what giving peace a chance accomplished. So it's not surprising that Palestinians are now saying, look, if armed resistance was good enough for countries like Greece and Italy and Holland during World War II when they were resisting the Nazis, then surely it's good enough for us too to be celebrated as heroes for resisting this occupation, which seeks to extinguish us and any claim we have to our ancestral land.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Mohammed Abu Sada joining us from Gaza City, and Barry Grossman speaking to us from Bali. Moving on, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says that Kiev is getting prepared for more intensive Russian attacks on the country's energy infrastructure.
Energy and utility workers in many regions continue restoration work in the energy network. We are also preparing responses to new possible terrorist attacks against our energy system. As of this evening, only stabilizing outage schedules are implemented in 16 regions and in Kyiv. But we must understand that in case of energy use jumps, emergency shutdowns are also possible.
Zelensky also announced that 4,000 points of invincibility have been set up in the country. These centers provide heating, electricity, mobile communication, and internet in case of long-term energy outages. Zelensky has been urging Ukrainian people to consume less electricity since half of the country's power capacity has been knocked out by Russian rockets. Scheduled blackouts are already in place in 16 districts, as well as in the capital, Kiev. Zelensky says emergency shutdowns are also possible. Johnny Miller explains why Russia has been targeting key infrastructure in Ukraine.
Russia hitting this energy infrastructure, it was inevitable. If NATO was to continue to support and supply Ukraine with weapons, and instead of pushing it to the negotiating table, it was always inevitable that Russia would simply up its attacks, widen its parameters on Ukraine. They wanted to have a peace negotiation by taking these four regions. NATO is determined to fight and try to take them back. So Russia is doing whatever it can to break the back of the Ukrainian military and break the ability of the Ukrainian government to look after the basic needs of its people, therefore pushing it to the negotiating table. just how bad it is for Ukrainian people, and it is getting worse. Winter is no longer coming. Winter has come. And it depends where you are in Ukraine. I've seen images of, you know, Odessa, of people protesting on the streets, blocking cars because they haven't had electricity.
Well, the U.S. Treasury Department says Washington and its allies are planning to finalize a price cap for Russian oil in the next few days. The measure would prohibit firms from transporting or providing insurance for Russian oil shipments sold above the fixed price. A group of seven wealthy nations, the European Union, and Australia will impose the scheme. The plan aims to deprive Moscow of a key source of funds to pay for its war in Ukraine. It will also help dial down high global energy prices. The Kremlin has repeatedly warned it would stop selling oil to countries that impose the ban. Russia has also said that it may cut crude production in response to the cap. Lower supplies generally push up oil prices in the market. And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. You Americans openly declared that you killed our fearless general. You murdered him, and you were proud of it. And you announced that you gave the orders. Martyr Soleimani was not just a national hero. He was the region's hero. Martyr Soleimani played a major and unparalleled role in solving the problems of several countries in the region. You martyred this general man and his companions, Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and several others. You supported those, the Zionists who assassinated our nuclear scientists. The Zionists martyred our scientists one by one, and you supported them. Not only did you fail to condemn them, but you also supported them.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You have frozen billions of dollars of the Iranian nation's assets in the U.S. and in other countries. If this money was at the disposal of a hard-working administration like the current administration, it would be able to do great things with it. But they froze these assets. They kept them. This excludes the assets that were frozen in the U.S. since the beginning of the revolution. The United States fingerprints can be seen in most anti-Iranian events, and then they claim that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They said this again yesterday, that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They lie with complete insolence. Of course, they have shown great enmity towards us, but the Iranian nation, getting the better of them, has thwarted many of these enmities. Some of these events are still with us. We have not forgotten them. We will never forget the martyrdom of Martyr Soleimani. They should know this. We have said something about this, and we stand by our word. It will happen at the right time, at the right place, God willing.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Negotiators from nearly 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt agreed to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters. They also agreed the globe needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions nearly in half by 2030. The agreement also reaffirmed the goal of keeping global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. However, for the 27th time, the UN climate talks have failed to directly address the biggest driver of the climate crisis, the production of gas, oil, and coal. This is amid calls for the phase-out of all fossil fuels inside the conference walls and beyond. More than 80 countries had supported a proposal to phase down the use of fossil fuels at the UN Climate Summit. Ultimately, an attempt to address the biggest source of the planet warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco, as the participants only agreed to phase down polluting coal power and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. That's after a number of oil and gas producing nations, led by Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it is more than frustrating to see overdue steps on mitigation and the phase-out of fossil energies being stonewalled by a number of large emitters and oil producers. Addressing the summit, the European Union's climate chief, Frans Timmermans, said the EU was disappointed with the final outcome of the summit.
What we have in front of us is not enough of a step forward for people and planet. We should have done much more.
The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, reacted with saying that the COP27 climate talks had fallen short in pushing for the urgent, drastic carbon cutting needed to tackle global warming.
Our planet is still in the emergency room. We need to drastically reduce emissions now. And this is an issue this COP did not address.
Environmental campaigners labeled the COP27 summit as yet another monumental failure to tackle climate crisis. Activists blasted richer countries for not doing more to limit carbon emissions. They say the US, EU, UK, and others came to the summit with empty words, hollow promises, and the refusal to take responsibility for having set the planet on fire and destroying millions of lives and livelihoods. While the agreement to establish a loss and damage fund represents immense progress for vulnerable nations who have been calling for finance to address the impacts of climate change for many years, this win is bittersweet. The failure to address the root cause of loss and damage through agreeing to phase out oil, gas, and coal will mean more loss and damage in future. Currently, approximately 84% of the world's energy needs are met from the usage of fossil fuels, especially oil. In 2021, the world consumed nearly 490 exajoules of fossil fuels. That amounts to an unfathomable figure of epic proportions. The world is on track to produce more than double the fossil fuels that are compatible with a 1.5 degrees Celsius target. The fossil fuel industry is also earning 11-figure profits from this addiction, while households struggle to afford basic needs and over 1 billion people live with almost no modern energy. Africa alone is home to 600 million people without access to electricity. The US and China top in fossil fuel consumption. According to data, an average American consumes at least 23 barrels of petroleum every year. With billions of dollars invested every year into establishing wars, strengthening military and weaponry technologies by developed nations, they still have not come up with a concrete solution to end complete dependency on fossil fuels. Future changes are expected to include a warmer atmosphere, a warmer and more acidic ocean, higher sea levels, and larger changes in precipitation patterns. The extent of future climate change depends on what we do now to reduce greenhouse gases.
Security services, the fake Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian. Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing seven people, including a nine-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed three of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. This stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Cheragh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons.
Salam-e-shahidane.
Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for three Basij volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again, people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided a fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, U.S. media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number, but big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, okay. And they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Iran has witnessed another deadly terrorist attack. The latest deadly incident happened in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces, killing several people, including a child and an elderly woman. The terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the assault. President Ebrahim Raisi has condoled with the families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all terrorists behind the attack. A senior judicial official says three people who were behind the brutal attack were arrested. The special operation is going on to identify and to bring to justice other people involved in the attack in the city of Izeh. Separately, a religious seminary school in the Izeh city was set ablaze by a group of rioters. No one was injured in that incident. Separately, three people were killed and eight security forces injured during riots in Semirom in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. Two security forces also killed and two others wounded in the city of Malikshahr in Isfahan province. Last month, a terrorist attack happened in the city of Shiraz. On October 26th, a terrorist attacked the popular Shia shrine of Shah Cheragh in Iran's southwestern province of Fars, killing over a dozen people. That attack was claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. The attacks come amid ongoing foreign-backed riots that have hit various Iranian provinces after a 22-year-old Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini died in the hospital despite intensive medical care and resuscitation efforts. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Iran says the attacks are part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says security services, the Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians are conspiring to trigger a civil war in Iran to destroy and to disintegrate the country. He warned them that Iran is not Libya or Sudan. He also noted that the enemies are targeting Iran's territorial integrity and identity, saying that Iran will not allow anyone to jeopardize national security. The terrorist attack comes amid Western attempts to stoke unrest in Iran and to create more economic hardships for the Iranian people. Late last month, Iran's main intelligence bodies reported that the U.S., backed by the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other allies, are devising a multidimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the U.S., Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that, through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you, we will crush you, you will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
The merits and virtues of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Shu'bat ibn al-Hajjaj from Simak, from Khalid ibn Ar'ara, said that he heard Ali, and Shu'bah again narrated from Al-Qasim ibn Abi Barra, from Abu al-Tufayl, that he heard Ali, and it is also authentically transmitted through many chains that Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, climbed the pulpit of Kufa and said, now this thing that Imam Ali has said is really famous, and you have probably heard this as well. He said above the pulpit of Kufa, you will not ask me about any verse in the book of Allah or about any sunnah from the messenger of Allah, except that I will inform you about that. And none of the Sahaba were ever able to make a similar claim. Imam Ali said, Saluni qabla an tafqiduni. Ask me before you lose me, or I pass away, and you're not able to ask me your questions. This is something which is accepted by both the Shia and the Sunni. And of course, the people of Kufa, many of them were also among the Sahaba.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, one of the beautiful aspects of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first divinely appointed Imam, of course, is his bravery and his courage. When talking about the bravery and the courage of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, as we said, an integral part of his persona, but we also see that mercy and forgiveness and kindness and charity and humbleness and generosity are also among the traits which are in balance in the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And as we have said in previous programs, of course, this balance in the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam and this balance of characteristics which would seem to be in contrast to one another, such as mercy and being forgiving with others, are two traits that are in contrast, but of course are in sync with one another in the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And of course, this happens because we see that Imam Ali alayhi salam is the embodiment of the teachings of the Messenger of Allah. He is the living, breathing miracle of the Messenger of Allah. He was the best student, the best apprentice of the Messenger of Allah, and of course, the embodiment of the teachings of the Holy Quran. Now, when we talk about bravery and courage, of course, in our own lives, we are at times faced with different kind of situations in which we need to show bravery and we need to show courage. Whether it is on a very individual and personal level, such as having to face a bully or having to say no to drugs, say no to alcohol, and even say no to a lot of the moral and ethical bad things that we face, such as lying or backbiting. All of these things necessitate courage. And so from the individual level, as we just said, to the societal and the global level in which we should have the bravery and courage to oppose those who are on the side of falsehood and those who promote falsehood and those who promote the way of shaitan. We have to have courage in order to fight and combat these kind of people. Now, we find that in the Battle of Khandaq, Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, went and fought, as a representative and the flag bearer of Islam in this war. As many of you know, there was a trench that was built around the city of Medina. And so this trench, which was built, a trench in Arabic is a khandaq. And so this was actually built at the advice by Salman al-Muhammadi, also known as Salman al-Farsi, who said that in their nation, which was Persia of ancient times, they used to do this as a war strategy. And so we see that in the Battle of Khandaq, Imam Ali goes and, of course, he slays their champion. And in order to cut the story short, unfortunately, a little bit, we find that the Messenger of Allah said that this one strike of Imam Ali alayhi salam that was on behalf of the forces of truth and justice, this one strike was more in weight and value than all of the worship of the men and the jinns combined. So it kind of just shows us here in conclusion the amount of value that is seen when one has the bravery and the courage to fight the forces of evil, whether it is on an individual level, a societal level, or even a global level. A beautiful, profound, and comprehensive lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعا وعلى القاصدين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajab Ali.
Imam Ali used to wake up in the morning and go to work. Early in the morning. Early in the morning he goes and feeds the poor. Early in the morning he goes and finishes his dhikr and goes and works. Early in the morning he starts till he comes home. But late at night, having finished his duties, his social duties, there are people in our community who are married, who are fathers, who don't even work and support their families. And they claim to be lovers of Ahlul Bayt. How can you be a lover of Ahlul Bayt if a man doesn't go and earn his living? That's the Holy Prophet once, I remember a history, story. These stories are something that should be in our heart. These are the actions of the Quran, where a man comes and shakes his hand and it was rough. The Prophet kisses it. He was a farmer. And the man says, "Oh, Ya Rasulullah, why did you kiss it?" He said, "This is the hand that brings halal living. This is the hand that goes and works and earns a living. This is the hand of a person like Imam Ali alayhi salam." That he goes to work and he refuses, he gives his duty, he distributes, that he comes home with meager amount of wealth. only to sustain his family. But no member of his family ever complained. No member. Yet they had an open door policy where people would come to their homes and Imam Ali used to feed the people. Look at the story. That Maytham at Ammar is being held by Ibn Ziyad, who wants to execute him, and says, why do you love Ali ibn Abi Talib? Why do you follow that man? You and I in the same shoes, brothers and sisters. There is much to say. He says, why do you love? And Maytham looks at him and says, if you can find me someone better, I will follow him. What an answer to Ibn Ziyad. If you can find me someone better, then I will follow him. Do you have anyone better? And it's logical. If I have something lesser and better, you're a fool to follow lesser. So Maytham is using logical argument. Subhanallah, what wisdom. At the moment of your death, when Ibn Ziyad has captured you, where you know your time is coming, where you know you're going to be put on that stick, where you know you're going to be hung. Allahu Akbar. That kind of love, you cannot compare it with any other relationship.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Philippines 73, Palestine 75.
Sport in Palestine.
Sports in Palestine faces a lot of obstacles that disturb the true essence of what sport is about. Under Israeli occupation for more than half a century, the industry of sport suffers greatly, just as the Palestinians themselves suffer daily.
We participated in several championships, including the Batna International Championship in Algeria. We also participated in the Arabic Championship and took fifth place. However, Palestine was deprived from participating in many external championships due to the Israeli siege that has been imposed for the past decade. In those 10 years, time goes by, along with the age of players, which means the end of their sporting career.
The Israeli occupation does not like to see Palestinian sports that represent the Palestinians as a civilian nation to the world with the ability to compete with other teams. The Palestinian athletes do not have immunity at all. Palestinian sports in general is not immune, whether in times of war or without war. You may find the Israeli warplanes shelling a sports club or stadium, arresting a player, or preventing a team from participating abroad.
And now, the national anthem of Palestine.
Sports for Palestinians could perhaps play a role in international forums. But the Israeli occupation does not want any positive attention to shine on the occupied territory, and so it oppresses sports development as a strategy to keep the international community away from the occupation's repressive activities.
For your information, in some championships, Israel imposed on the host nation not to raise any country's flag so that Palestine's flag would not be raised. However, in the last championship,